I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. A couple of decades ago, a lot of people wondered what would happen to local farmers and farming. As industrial farming dominated, farmers were aging, and fewer young people were stepping up to replace them. Many old farms turned into suburban and exurban housing developments. Then along came the local farm movement, farmers markets, farm-to-fork restaurants, community-sponsored agriculture, and with it, a new interest in farming. Some research shows that 70% of today's beginning farmers did not grow up on a farm. We'll speak with Greg Bowen, president of Maryland FarmLink, which provides resources and support to men and women whose desire to support the local food movement evolved into careers. Maryland's new farmers, after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks with you every Monday through Friday, noon to 2 on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO Ocean City, and streaming live online through WYPR.org. We thank you again for making Midday part of your day. Every 5 years, the U.S. Department of Agriculture conducts a census of farms and farmers. And if you compare the 2012 agriculture census to those done in recent decades, there are a few noticeable trends. For one, the number of American farms is decreasing. Where in 1982 there were nearly 2.5 million farms, in 2012 that number had declined to about 2 million. In 2012, the average age of an American farmer was 58. That number has risen continually for the last 30 years. In fact, there are now 6 times more farmers 65 and older than there are 34 and younger. According to the USDA website, half of all current farmers are likely to retire in the next decade. These national trends are reflected in Maryland. According to agriculture census data, between the years 1959 and 2002, Maryland lost about one-third of its farmland, or around 1 million acres. And although that pace has slowed in recent years, it's continuing to trend downward. There is also a widening age gap of farmers here. Back in 1959, farmers younger than 34 represented 11% of Maryland farmers. In 2012, that number had dropped to 5%. Because of this shift, industry watchers are warning that it's important to recruit new farmers into the business to sustain the Maryland farm economy for the future. One way of doing this is through the local food movement. The proliferation of farmers markets and farm-to-table restaurants across the country has inspired a new generation of farmers to dig into the good earth. During this hour of Midday, we'll be talking about the Maryland farm economy and what's behind some of these trends. We'll also discuss how the locavore movement is influencing the agriculture in our area. A little later on the show, we'll speak with two local farmers about why they got into the business and what they make of the changing dynamics in farming today. But to get us started, I want to say hello to Greg Bowen. Greg Bowen lives on a farm in southern Maryland and is an expert on land preservation and agricultural policy. He's also the program director of an organization we'll tell you about during this hour of the show. It's called Maryland FarmLink. Maryland FarmLink connects working farmers to farm resources. It also operates a farmer mentorship program. So, Greg Bowen, nice to have you on our show. Nice to meet you.
Great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your own background, and then I want to hear all about Maryland FarmLink. What brought you to this?
Well, I grew up on a tobacco farm in southern Maryland, and as a kid, I wanted to be a farmer. Now, my dad kind of said to, hedge your bets a little bit and go off to college anyway and prepare for alternatives, but come back to the farm when you can. And when I did come back and graduate from college, I started out as a farmer. I was president of the Young Farmers of our county farm bureau, and I decided to raise tobacco, but also pursue some vegetable production. But I realized pretty quickly on that the farm was not large enough for another farmer, and so I went off into a professional planning career. But I still was attracted to farming, And I've been monitoring the farm industry ever since.
I remember being told when I first moved to Maryland and met some farmers, that's in the late 70s, early 80s, that if you didn't inherit a farm, it was going to be impossible to start a farm, that it would be too expensive, too costly.
That's true. And even those who grew up on a farm and had money, land to inherit, we've seen fewer farmers be able to stay on the farm because farming has been getting bigger. As we've become more efficient, we've needed fewer farms, bigger tractors could cover more ground. And so across the country, we've lost hundreds of farmers, even those who grew up on farms.
And many farmers in Maryland and other states made the decision just to sell their land off. And in some places, suburban areas, exurban areas, even further out, rural areas, they sold off.
Absolutely.
So tell us about FarmLink and what got you to this project. First, what is it?
Well, FarmLink, there's a lot of states in the country that have a FarmLink program experiencing the same things that we have been in Maryland. And we started this in Southern Maryland because of a major event that happened around 1999-2000. When Governor Glenn Denning was in office, this was about the time that there was the master settlement agreement between 46 states and the major tobacco companies. And at that time, with that settlement agreement, Maryland got a major share of money, which it called the Cigarette Restitution Fund. Some of that money went to health care, helping people get away from cigarettes, but 5% of it went towards Maryland tobacco farmers. Governor Glenn Denning wanted to get tobacco out of the state of Maryland. And so the monies were utilized to help to create a buyout program for Southern Maryland farmers or any farmers in Maryland growing tobacco, and then also funds to help farmers transition out of tobacco so we wouldn't lose all that land as farmland.
I'm glad you're here to explain that, because while I remember the big settlement, I don't remember that 5% at all. Did that happen in other states where there was tobacco growing?
Actually, Maryland was one of the few states that tried to deal with the whole agricultural production. A lot of other funds were just not committed and went into general accounts in other states.
So what happened in that 5%? Were there just some direct buyouts, or did some farmers use the money to transition to another form of agriculture?
And that's what we have, in fact, tried to do, because the concern was we would lose those farmers, we would lose those farms altogether. They would stop growing tobacco, but they would just sell it off for development. So some monies were put towards land preservation incentives, and other monies went towards helping farmers transition into other crops.
Interesting. Now, what counties are we talking about? When we say Southern Maryland, for our listeners, we're talking about Charles County, St. Mary's?
Calvert.
Calvert County.
Anne Arundel and Prince George's were the major tobacco counties.
And some of that money, some of that 5%, which was a considerable sum, I suppose, went into land preservation. Now,
Yes. This
was so farmers could stay on that. Basically, they were selling off their development rights to stay on the land?
That's correct.
We recently did a show about program Open Space in Maryland, which I know you're familiar with, and I was surprised to see the long waiting list of farmers hoping to get some money from the state to sell off their development rights so they could stay on their farms.
That's correct. There has been a lot of interest, fortunately, and almost 800,000 acres have been preserved through land preservation programs. But the reduction in funds for program Open Space, you know, put some of that at risk.
So tell us about FarmLink. What's the idea here, and what brought you to this project?
Well, I actually was on the board of Southern Maryland Ag Development Commission when it was established. I was working, I was planning director for Calvert County Department of Planning and Zoning. And so I was involved in when it got started, and then observing and participating in some of the decisions as the monies were being spent. But I went off the board, but I continued to see what was happening with the program. And about 5 years ago, the board decided that just helping the farmers wasn't enough, that some farms were going to come up for sale, and if they did, they wanted to be purchased or leased by a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And so Somatic researched the various options and discovered a lot of states did have a FarmLink program, a program that would allow farmers who had land to sell to post it on this site, and then farmers would know that this would be a good place to go to find land to buy or to lease. So there really was no place commonly recognized where people could find land for lease in the state of Maryland.
So like a clearinghouse of what's available.
Exactly right.
Right. Interesting. How much tobacco farming is done in Maryland today? Is it all gone?
Fewer than 5% of the farmers stayed with tobacco production of the original group.
So FarmLink, I was looking at your website, and folks, if you want to take a look at FarmLink, if you've been unfamiliar with it until now, want to know more about it, you can find a link to it on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. So you list farms for sale or lease. What else do you do? This is there for new farmers, right? This isn't just for people who are currently in agriculture. This is for those who have grown an interest in it.
Absolutely. And so we wanted to provide lots of other resources for beginning farmers because, as you noted earlier, a large percentage of the beginning farmers now did not grow up on a farm. And so they need lots of assistance. One of the things we have is a tutorial for zoning so that if you're looking for land to lease, you want to be able to be sure that you can do the kind of production that you want to do on that piece of land. Has the land been preserved? And if so, are there conditions that may impact the ability for you to produce? So we have a guide for land preservation programs. What are the soils like on the property? USDA has a great website for identifying soils. But if you're just interested in farming, you need a guide to help you through how to do that. So we have a tutorial on that as well.
Have you taken people who never farmed into the business?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of these folks that are coming out now just have the heart and the will to do it. And maybe they did a little gardening with their families and that's it, but they would like to be their own boss.
Yeah.
They would like to do it themselves, and they see the local food movement and the opportunity to start a business.
You know, if you go back 20 years, even 30 years, what we didn't see coming was this interest in local produce. I mean, you assume, human beings always have an interest in that, but how much is available? And I don't think we predicted the amount of interest there would be. Look at all the farmers markets that have sprouted up across the state, for one thing. The number of CSAs, community supported agriculture programs that are in place now. I don't know. Did you see this coming in 1990 or 1995?
Not at all. I mean, this really has been a savior for agriculture in Maryland because we have the customers. The metropolitan area, the Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia metropolitan area, is the wealthiest region in the country, highest level of income. And they have a huge food budget. And so we live close to that area, and we have the opportunity to provide fresh produce to that community.
Some people probably get this idea. It seems a little romantic to them at first. Yeah, I want to grow Belgian endive or something. I don't know. I want to have a farm, but that sounds so daunting. It sounds like, you know, I need tractors. I need a big spread of land. Can people get into the business modestly at first?
Absolutely can, and you'll have a couple of farmers coming on afterwards that can tell you about that. But it does require, the National Young Farmers Coalition did a survey of those beginning farmers, and they say the major challenges, number one, access to land, number two, access to capital, number three is education. And we have the Farm Mentorship Program, which is part of a larger program I'd like to tell you a little bit about, that helps with the education portion of it.
And what about the capital part of it? I mean, I guess that's what might be daunting to people. I need lots of money to get started.
That is absolutely true. I mean, Maryland's farmland is three times the national average for the price of farmland. So that's very tough to just go out there and buy a piece of land unless you have...
Is that true for lease as well as sale?
Not so much for lease. Mm-hmm. Actually, our farmland leases for less than, say, the Midwest or the West Coast. And so there's your opportunity, again, if you can find that land. But even if you just have a will, but you don't have a resume to say, hey, and I know how to farm, it may be difficult for you to convince that owner that you should be allowed to farm that land.
Hmm. So you're seeing a lot of enthusiasm, that was the word I was looking for. Are you seeing a lot of enthusiasm, especially among younger people, about getting into farming?
Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, it's something you've noticed in the last, you've only been in operation a couple of years, right, FarmLink?
That's right.
Greg Bowen is here from Maryland FarmLink, the program director of Maryland FarmLink. If you want to ask a question, please give us a call, 410-662-8780 is our number. Up next, we'll welcome onto the show two local farmers who can tell us why they got into the business and what they make of the changing dynamics in farming today, what they do out there on the farm. That's coming up after this short break. Again, you're welcome to call in. This is Live Talk here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Perhaps you have an interest in becoming a farmer in Maryland. You know, it's not impossible. Our Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. Welcome back to Midday, talking about new Maryland farmers in this hour of the show. Greg Bowen is joining us, program director of Maryland FarmLink, an organization that connects farmers with farm resources and encourages young farmers and provides them with mentors. You said you wanted to talk about that a little bit. You have a mentorship program where some of the more experienced farmers talk to the youngins, huh?
Exactly right. We got a grant through USDA this was in concert with the University of Maryland Extension and Future Harvest CASA, University of Maryland Eastern Shore, mm-hmm. to provide training for beginning farmers. And so each of us has a program that does things a little bit differently. Emma can tell you about one of the projects, one of the programs, and John the other.
Emma is Emma Jagaz of Moon Valley Farm, which is in Baltimore County. Emma, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And also in a bit, we'll be talking with John Dove of Love Dove Farms in Howard County. But Emma, you're 28 years old. How long have you been farming now?
3 years.
3 years. You have your own place?
Yeah. Well, I'm farming on my parents' land.
It's your parents' land. Were your parents farmers, or they just own a lot? How much land do you have?
They have 2.5 acres, and right now I'm also farming my next-door neighbor's yard and some other friend of the family's place.
So how much land total do you think you're actually farming?
I have about 2 acres in cultivation.
See that? You don't need a 50-acre spread to do this.
A lot of farmers can make a pretty good income on a pretty small amount of land. You just have to know what to do.
What do you grow?
I grow vegetables mostly, also herbs, medicinal herbs, and some native fruits. I also have an apiary and chickens and ducks for eggs.
All right. So at 25, you decided to do this.
That's right.
What was your background? I mean, did you go to college?
Yes, for something else. I went for American Studies and Women's Studies. And how I got into it is I kept theorizing in all my papers that you have to write that our systems are kind of messed up, and and one way for communities to regain power is through the food system. And people really need to eat, and healthy food can make for healthy people, which is pretty much all you need in life is health and food.
Mm-hmm. So that got you thinking, why don't I produce some?
Yeah.
Had you done any gardening when you were a kid?
Not really. My mom did a little bit but mostly flowers and some vegetables, mostly eaten by the deer.
So, and Emma, where is Moon Valley Farm?
It's in Cockeysville.
Cockeysville. All right. And so you've been doing this for 3 years. You grow vegetables. You said you have some poultry and the apiary.
Yep.
So you're making honey.
Yes.
And where do you take your vegetables? Where do you take your produce?
Nowhere, fortunately. I started with a CSA program, the Community Supported Agriculture. So people come to the farm to pick up. And now I also sell to restaurants. So I sell to, the farm-to-table restaurants.
I'm glad you could take some time to be with us today. What's going on the farm, say, in the last week? What have you been doing?
So much.
It's imagine. It's, tell us what.
I'm building a walk-in cooler. Well, last night of the, you know, with the frost, I had to, my husband came with around with me and covered up all of my plants.
What do you actually have in the ground now?
All cool weather crops. I have lettuces, spinach, radishes, turnips, a bunch of stuff.
And so you did some covering up last night.
Yeah.
And as far as your CSA go, I don't want to assume that everybody knows what that is. Community supported agriculture. You as the customer put up some money to help the farmer get started, and then every week during the growing season, you get something out of it. Sometimes it's a lot of Swiss chard, sometimes a lot of other things too, right?
Yeah.
It's not just Swiss chard.
No,
the one I was in, we had plenty of Swiss chard, but there were other things too.
Yeah.
How are you doing with that? How many customers do you have?
I have 40 this year.
That's excellent.
And
what do you think of this, Greg? What do you think? How's Emma doing?
Emma is doing very well.
For 3 years, it sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, I've been to her farm, and she is an innovator. She does so much to reach out to the farm, to the community around her, and to reinforce the importance of local agriculture and healthy local food.
And I was thinking also, since you're in Cockeysville, you're in a heavily populated area, so you can draw from plenty of folks there. You're not out in a rural area expecting people to drive to meet you at a location to get their vegetables from you, right?
Yeah, that's one of the draws of my farm is that I could have any number of customers that I want, I think, because of my location. But I am really excited to say that I have 5 people in my neighborhood on my street out of maybe less than 20 people who live on the street. They're part of my CSA now.
Who support
so it's
you.
Getting very, very local.
What was the hardest part about getting started? You had the advantage of using your parents' property, for one thing, and then some property, adjoining property, right?
Yeah.
What was the hardest part about getting started?
I don't think it was necessarily very hard for me to get started. There's hard work day to day. I really didn't have any money. I really didn't have any money.
I believe you. that's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
You need to buy hoes and rakes and maybe a tractor.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I just farm with a tiller and with hand tools. And I have a deer fence for deer. Most everything else gets through it. But deer really decimate crops. So I had about enough money for deer fence. And then the CSA kind of paid for the rest of the stuff. I made all my own compost. The CSA started off and paid for my seeds. And
did you put out a CSA sign the first year you were there?
I still actually don't have a sign in my front yard.
No, I'm being metaphorical here. I mean, did you tell people you had a CSA the first year to get support, or did you have a growing season and then you did right from the start?
From the start, I was exclusively a CSA.
That was your plan.
Yes.
Yeah. And young farmers or new farmers, we'll call them, Greg, is that usually part of their business plan to get a CSA going?
CSA is probably one of the most common. A lot of them also sell at farmers markets. Those are probably the top two ways that they reach out to the community to sell.
But Emma Jagaz of Moon Valley Farm in Cockeysville, this is working out for you, going the CSA route.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't do farmers market because I also raise my kids full time, who are now 3 and 4 years old.
Oh,
so
wow.
I can make them farm with me, but I can't make them sit still at a farmers market.
Right. Okay. Emma Jagaz, sit right there, Emma. We'll come back with some more questions. Again, to our listeners, during this hour of the show, we're talking about getting into farming in Maryland on a large scale, small scale, medium scale. 410-662-8780 is a phone number for Midday. If you have a question about this, perhaps you've been curious about what it would take to get started in Maryland growing some local produce or perhaps poultry, even sheep, wool. I saw there's a wool festival someplace in Maryland this weekend. Well, now we're going to speak to John Dove. John is with Love Dove Farms out in Howard County. John's joining us by phone today. Hi, John.
Hey, Dan. How you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing with that frost last night? How did that work out for you?
Did okay. We were able to get everything. We only have lettuce that's really planted where it was really going to be affected. We have a lot of like the small seeds like the kale and spinach and all the cold weather stuff, so they didn't have any issue.
Okay.
But I was able to keep all the tomato plants and all that stuff safe and sound in our high tunnel.
And I didn't ask in your high tunnel. I didn't ask Emma about this. Let me ask you this long, cold endless winter that we seem to have this past year. Did that? How did that affect your planting? Either one, John, or go ahead, Emma. Go ahead.
Everything kind of went as planned so far. I would like it to become spring and stay spring pretty soon. But right. Our average last frost date is April 15th, which is yesterday. So we're doing pretty well.
Oh, so actually they hit the mark, April 15th.
Yeah.
After that,
tonight,
it's not allowed, right?
I'll allow tonight, but yeah, after this, I might have issues.
And John, how about you? What would you say about that?
Yeah, definitely. It's been, took a long time to get out into the fields. I really wanted to get out there and work the ground, but it was just completely saturated and couldn't get out there to get some things going. Our potatoes came in a little late, so our potato seeds came in late, our seed potatoes. So because the Northeast also, where we get our potato seed, they were saturated also, so they couldn't get into the ground to get their potatoes to send them out to us. So it's been, I think everyone's had a kind of a slow start, that's for sure.
John Dove, please describe Love Dove Farms for us. Where is it? How large is it? And what do you do there?
Sure. So Love Dove Farms is in western Harrod County. We are going into our fourth year in production. We grow on about 6 acres of vegetable production. We've been kind of steadily doubling every year, pretty much. So the first year, 2010, we did about an acre, and then 2 acres, and then 3 to 4. And so this year we're kind of doing about 6 acres roughly. We grow all naturally, so we don't use any chemicals or pesticides. We grow vegetables, anything from kale, spinach, arugula, sugar snap peas, heirloom tomatoes. We do garlic. We're also trying like a couple cool things this year. We're going to try doing some ginger. Hmm. We have a couple high tunnels, and so a high tunnel is essentially a big greenhouse, except you plant directly into the ground. It keeps it warmer in there, prevents like the frost from happening, so you can get earlier start. Also, it can extend your season further into the season, so that we put tomatoes in there, we can be getting tomatoes out of there in October.
And John, tell us a little bit about how you got started. Did you grow up on a farm? Did you have any farming experience?
Yeah, so the farm that we're farming with is our family farm. So I'm actually a fourth generation farmer on Love Dove Farms. Love Dove Farms was established by me and my girlfriend in 2010 by us leasing about an acre to 2 acres, now up to 6, from my grandmother. Right now, the farm itself, so Dove Farms, is about 200 acres. Of that 200 acres, 100 of it is actually tillable. So essentially, we have hay on all the rest of the ground. So on 194 acres, we have hay growing, and then we're doing the vegetable production on the 6 acres. I got into it through, actually, I went to school. I went to Towson University. I got a degree in environmental science. And then I heard about this internship opportunity, and it was offered through Future Harvest and I think like North County Preservation. And at the time, it was called the New Farmer Trainee Program. Now it's called the Beginning Farmer Trainee Program. So I went ahead and I applied, and I worked with Jack and Becky Gurley of Calvert's Gift Farm. One day a week. They're up in Sparks, Maryland. They're an organic farm growing fruits and vegetables. They sell at farmers markets. And I think he was working with maybe 3 acres, but the two of them made a good living and a happy living. And so from that, me and my girlfriend talked about it, and we decided, hey, I think we could probably convert a couple acres over to vegetable production and give it a shot, see what happens. So 4 years later.
John, you studied environmental science, you said.
Yes, sir.
Did you think for a time about doing something else? I mean, it wasn't a given that you were going to be a farmer?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't a given. I wasn't sure. I had always had a garden, always enjoyed it, always liked being outside. But I didn't really think, it didn't really occur to me, actually, until even when I did the trainee program, when I was in the trainee program and I was doing it every day or once a week going up there, I enjoyed it and I thought, hey, this is pretty cool. But I wasn't sure if it was going to be a realistic option.
Right.
And it wasn't until I kind of said, you know, let's give it a shot. And my mom actually told me, said, you know, John, you've always been a farmer, whether you realize it or not, you've always have been. So I think it really kind of all of a sudden was an enlightenment where I realized, hey, you know, I think I've always have been, and I probably always will be.
So your grandmother's farm is Dove Farms?
Yes.
And your piece of it is Love Dove?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that, John. Very nice.
Thanks.
Very good. So I mean, at this point, you say it is realistic. You're making a living.
Yeah, I think it definitely is realistic. And, you know, it helps where the community supports you and, you know, the community goes out and buys my fruits and veggies and, you know, they're very supportive. So, you know, I think having this local food movement keep thriving really helps these young farmers and helps, you know, get established. I think it can be difficult to get established early on. You have to make a name for yourself and you have to, you know, make sure that you always bring a quality product with you.
If you don't mind me asking about this, about the business side of it and the cost of getting started, John, can you tell us about that? I mean, you had an advantage there leasing land from family, but what about the rest of it, equipment and all?
Yeah, you know, I think I had a couple of advantages because I leased the acreage, which, you know, it's not too expensive when you're leasing it. Fortunately for me, you know, it is family and we're able to go ahead and get it to happen. You know, I think I think the biggest issue with young farmers coming in and trying to find property is you're going to have to go to a stranger, someone who has a farm, and be able to say, hey, you know, I'd like to build this infrastructure. You know, like Emma was saying, she's building a walk-in cooler. You know, you have to be able to build an infrastructure that is kind of like a perennial. You know, you're going to be doing this for multiple years. It's a long-term commitment where a lot of farmers are happy to lease a few acres here and there as long as it's only for the season where you're going to plant corn or soybeans or what have you. But back to your question, in terms of cost, yeah, you know, the land lease was pretty minor. And then just, you know, we had to get some equipment. We needed to invest in a tiller. We got one that goes behind our tractor. That way we can do nice 5-foot swaths. And that was, I think it was about $3,000 for that tiller. We already had the tractor because we're already an operating farm. So that really worked out well for us. But besides that, yes, seed cost. And early on when you're working with 1 acre or so, you know, the seed cost isn't that bad. Maybe $500 or mm-hmm. something for the season.
But now you're up to 6 acres.
Now we're up to 6 acres. Yeah, so now seed prices get up a little higher. You have to be able to get enough things for everything. But, yeah, we're having fun, that's for sure.
It's an interesting story, John. Thank you, John Dove. Greg Bowen, just curious, some of the farmers you've met over the years and maybe since establishing Maryland FarmLink were thinking, like John, maybe thinking of doing something else. Their family was into farming, but they didn't see a future there. Maybe now they do.
That has been the big change. And for decades, particularly when I was getting out of college, they wanted farming to persist, but they were just not seeing great prospects. A lot of the industry started moving out of Maryland. I mean, there was a lot of cattle that started going away as they could not compete with the bigger scale operations in other parts of the country. Same thing with pig production. When you're selling all this at wholesale, it's really hard to be able to compete at the national level or at the global level. But suddenly the local food movement changed all that because people were more interested in quality. They wanted to know where the food was coming from and more variety. I'm sure that on Love Dove Farm and on Emma's farm, there's a lot more variety, and they care more about the quality and the taste and the freshness
right.
than how long it can last on a shelf.
We're going to take some calls here in just a minute, folks. We need to take another short break on Midday. We'll come back more with Greg Bowen of Maryland FarmLink, Emma Jagaz of Moon Valley Farm in Baltimore County, and joining us by phone, John Dove of Love Dove Farms out in Howard County. A short break on Midday, then we'll take some calls. And this is the Midday Show. Dan Roderick's here, 410-662-8780. If you have a question about getting into farming, we're talking about Maryland's new farmers, new generation of farmers, taking advantage of the interest in local food, farmers markets, farm-to-table restaurants, community-supported agriculture. Brandon, we'll go to you secondly. Let me start with Hazak first because he's been holding the longest here. Hazak, go right ahead with your question. Hello.
Hi, Dan. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask your guests if they could comment on the movement of farms into our cities. I live right down in Station North, and Hidden Harvest is across the street from me. And I was sort of wondering, where does the movement of farms into our cities affect sort of Maryland at large?
Well, I think it's a great thing because, again, the more local you can get, the better it is. Urban farming and in cities in particular have a few more challenges because you have to wonder how that soil had been used in the past, and so sometimes it requires special testing to do it. And then the zoning regulations in the cities weren't really designed for agriculture, and so there too you have to watch to be sure that the city reps will allow that type of use on the property. But other than that, it's a good thing.
Yeah, and if you can get the land and the land's okay, you only need an acre or two to get started. And we've had some examples of that cited on our show in the past year. Brandon, I'll go to you next. Brandon's in Uppercoat with a question for Emma. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. First, I wanted to say your caller from Howard County, your guest, he had mentioned Calvert's Gift Farm. And that farm has truly opened my mind and my heart to just this way of living, if not just eating fresh vegetables. Mm-hmm. But my actual question was for the guest from Cockeysville. What was the hardest thing when you started chickens? What was the greatest obstacle you had to overcome?
Predator death. Death by predator. So I've had a lot of losses from foxes and raccoons, and I still do. My husband actually just bought me a working dog. A puppy, actually, mm-hmm. but it will soon be a large working dog who is supposed to defend my flock against predator death. I have as good of a fence as I can make, and they just climb in it anyway.
Yeah. Are your chickens cage-free then?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. There's no way. Small farms right now have, like, little cages.
Right.
Yeah, I do have them in a permanent run situation. I don't have enough land to move them around all the time, but my flock has a really great situation. They live under a huge forsythia bush, and then they also have a run where I compost with them in it, so I give them damaged foods, you know, stuff that I can't sell, maybe have stink bug damaged tomatoes or something like that. And old spinach and things that doesn't get picked up from the CSA members, wilted produce. And so I give them all that kind of stuff to pick through. And
how many do you have?
I've got 20 chickens, and I also have ducks in with the chickens. So I have 8 ducks, and they're all for eggs.
Were there any zoning issues in Cockeysville with regard to your farm generally and chickens in particular?
Fortunately, no, not for my street. My street happens to be an old... have old rural zoning laws, and for the chickens you have to have an acre, and we have 2.5, so that was fine. And we also I don't have roosters to kind of be neighbor friendly, and I also give my neighbors eggs.
Good idea. So the biggest problem has been predators, but you're hoping the puppy will take care of that next, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Let's go back to Greg Bowen, more on Maryland FarmLink. I'm really interested in this organization and what you're doing this year. The mentorship program, I asked you about that before. I want to hear a little bit more about that. You're trying to get some of the older farmers involved in the program?
That's right. So we've been reaching out both to beginning farmers and to experienced farmers to get them both to sign up as potential match. And this is throughout the state. And so we're looking on both sides. But if you're a beginning farmer like Emma or John, it's great having somebody that you can talk to say, you know, what is this bug, or, you know, what do you think works best in terms of a type of onion in this region? And it works out as a great arrangement. And we have that ability through the grant that we got from USDA. Emma is started up as a beginning farmer who asked to have a mentor. And then we were able to match her up with somebody who has experience as
Can you tell us about that, Emma?
Yeah. So I never thought I would be a farmer. I didn't know any farmers at all. And so when I just became one. So I just started farming, and then I found some farm friends, but they were kind of like my age in the beginning, doing, you know, not really knowing what they were doing as well on a lot of fronts. So I organized a young farmer meetup.
So they were new too, you mean?
They were new too. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I organized a young farmer meetup, and we meet up every month at each other's farms and talk about stuff. But, you know, things that are relevant to the season and the month. But I didn't know anyone who I could say, this is what I really want to know about. And, you know, I want you to really be an authority on this subject. Like Tom was saying, Greg was saying about Tom, my mentor.
Who is your mentor's name? Tom?
Tom Reinhardt.
Reinhardt?
Reinhardt.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's of Never Done Farms in Carroll County.
I like that name.
Never done. Yep. Yeah. It's very true. I feel that way every day. I asked him about some onion varieties. I asked him about different things, what works in this region, what doesn't, and he's going to try to help me become certified organic because he is certified organic and I'm seeking.
You met him through Maryland FarmLink?
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent idea. And John Dove is still with us. Love Dove Farms out there. Since you're from a farming family, maybe you knew some of this stuff, but have you gotten any advice from someone with more experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jack Gurley was probably...
Oh, you mentioned him. Yeah, you mentioned
him. Yeah, my mentor. So, you know, after the season, you know, he actually went through and helped us with picking out seeds and kind of having a good sense of the seeds that he goes with. I think that's one of the daunting tasks initially, is figuring out what varieties to do, what plants, you know, where, what to choose, what to work with. So he helped me a lot with that. You know, also, you know, we're kind of in a different age now where you can kind of start to look into some things, just, you know, just check online and try to figure something out. You know, if you see a spider or a bug or something, you can just kind of pull that up real quick. And because I know Jack's busy too, so I try not to, you know, bother him too much about that. But he really helped a lot with kind of the initial establishment of figuring out what exactly to get going with.
Hey, John, I'm not sure I asked you about this. Your business plan is to take your produce to market, or do you have a CSA? I'm not sure I asked you about that.
We actually do three farmers markets in the area. We do two in Howard County, one at the Miller Library in Ellicott City, and one at the Howard County Hospital on Fridays. Both of them are 2 to 6. And then we also go down to Silver Spring on Saturday. That's 9 to 1.
Okay.
And then we also do a CSA. The first year, I wasn't as brave as Emma. I couldn't do a CSA my first year. I was just too worried about not everything going well. But after that, we've done it, and now we have about 45 members this year.
What have you found to be the most effective way for spreading the word about your CSA? Hey, that rhymed, and I didn't mean it. But what have you found to be the most effective way? Is it word of mouth? Do you do flyers at a farmer's market? Emma, what about in your case? You said you're up to, what, 40 now?
Yeah. I think it's word of mouth. I also have a website that I know some people have learned about me from, and a Facebook group. But, yeah, I've had absolutely no trouble getting CSA members, and I haven't tried much farther than
okay, and,
than those
and
things,
is 40 your high number for the 3 years?
Yes.
Okay, and how about you, John? What have you found to be the most effective way to get the word out about your farm?
Yeah, I would have to agree that just kind of our website, we have a Facebook page. But I think, truthfully, it's the same kind of deal where, you know, we didn't want to – we're not focusing all of our energy on that. I think that if we did some flyers around at some local businesses, we could really amp up our CSA membership. But right now we feel comfortable right around, because it takes a lot more maintenance so we feel comfortable right around 50 members. But I think we could, if we really focused on marketing, really amp it up.
Greg Bowen, another question for you from Maryland FarmLink. We talk a lot about produce here with Emma and John, and of course Emma's got some poultry too, but what about those who want to get into meat production, beef production, lamb production? What about that? That seems a little more daunting than just, I want to say any of this is easy, but I mean, what about that in terms of the market too? Because you can have only so many people producing onions and Swiss chard, I guess. There I go bringing up Swiss chard again, sorry.
Well, number one, we haven't begun to tap the market. I mean, because we're probably intruding in about 1-2% of the total food budget for this region. So there's lots of room to move yet.
Okay.
But you're right on point that there is a market for locally raised meats. And again, people are very interested in how that is grown. And so there are a lot of beginning farmers. I would say the number one thing the beginning farmers are interested in is vegetables. Number two is livestock. And so we have lots of beginning farmers that are giving that a try as well.
I had another question. I'm just curious about this. A farmer who's getting older and thinking about retiring, taking on a young farmer and really mentoring him or her through the whole process to the point where maybe they could, you know, first lease the land, maybe even buy the land out. Have you seen that kind of example?
There has been some of that. And there's also, for large livestock, there is the Maryland Grazers Program. And that one has been around for much longer. And they have a mentorship program, and there have been some farmers that have been moving out of production themselves, but they have a heart for passing it on. And mm-hmm. so they've been doing this for more years, and some of them are scaling back themselves, but they're working then more with beginning farmers who want to grow on grass.
And Maryland FarmLink conducts classes?
We do. Through Smatic we do, but also University of Maryland Extension has great resources, and they're out there teaching all the time. And they have a great website as well. It's called Beginning Farmer Success. So if you Google Maryland Beginning Farmer Success, they'll show you lots of YouTube videos and resources that can help people learn.
I'm going to ask Emma this, and then I'll ask John this. Your best advice to someone who's thinking what you were thinking 3 or 4 years ago about getting into farming in Maryland?
Be diverse. Plant 50 different kinds of vegetables if you have the kind of space to do that, to figure out what really works for you in the area.
What about getting over
the
fear?
Soil.
What about getting over the fear of doing it?
Oh, no. Then it's not for you.
Didn't sound like you had a problem with that, Emma.
No.
John, what about you? What's your advice to someone who says, gee, I think I want to be a farmer?
I would say just give it a shot. What's the worst that happens? It's one season. You have some seeds. Just give it a shot and see what you can do. I think that's the best advice I can give.
Hey, Greg, how about you?
I would say use the resources. There are a lot of mistakes made because people didn't check out what the resources were and take advantage of them.
And you just mentioned the Agricultural Extension, University of Maryland, and Maryland FarmLink. And the link to FarmLink you can find on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. Greg Bowen's been with us, Program Director of Maryland FarmLink. Interesting organization, just started in the last couple of years. So you can find out more about it on their website. Thank you very much, Greg. And Emma, thank you for being here. Now you got to get back to work, right?
Indeed.
All right, Emma Jagaz of Moon Valley Farm in Cockeysville. And John Dove, we won't keep you any longer. I know you're eager to get outside today. John Dove of Love Dove Farms in Western Howard County. Thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our first hour of Midday. That's our first hour. This is where we take a break for lunch. Today, provided by Breathe Bookstore Cafe, serving inspired vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free savories and sweets and more. Open 7 days a week at 810 West 36th Street in good old Hamden, right there on the avenue, breathebooks.com for more information. Thank you, Breathe Books. Thank you, everyone. We got another hour coming up. David Zurowick's going to be with us for our monthly Midday on Media session with the Z on TV. So please stay tuned for that, following the NPR news.